Hey, Darren.
Hi, Ash. I'm your conscience.
Oh, getting over working overtime this week.
Yes. It's
How's it?
time.
How is the election? Is your election still ongoing in Florida?
No, we're done. We had those counted in no time.
What a novel experience to
Give
finish
it up for
counting on
Ron
election
DeSantis.
day.
Give it up for DeSantis, everybody.
Shout out to Florida on the Colorado show. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Colorado Show. And it's the first show back after the election. It's been a crazy week, and we're going to get into all of it.
Oh, you
how
know,
are
let's
how are you doing?
Let's drop a Don DeMarco for President Trump. Yes.
Don DeMarco. Marco.
President Trump did win. He went in Colorado. Also,
he should have
election results
he
in Colorado.
Have.
He should have. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. But there was a red wave that actually swept the nation. And Colorado stands as one of the lone, if not the lone holdout. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the libertarian lawsuit. We're going to talk about the races that are still outstanding, the new House leadership, incoming House leadership vote that took place. Investigations are happening into Jenna across multiple domains. We are going to get into all of it, but before we do, let's hear from our sponsor.
Because of your overwhelming support, our 1488 MyPillow has been one of the biggest sales in MyPillow history. I couldn't think of a better way to say thank you than to extend our wholesale pricing through Christmas. Get a classic standard MyPillow for only $14.88. Upgrade to a queen size, just $18.88. King size, only a dollar more. Get my body pillows for only $29.88. And ready? Multi-use MyPillows, only $9.88. It's perfect time to stock up for Christmas gifts for everyone on your list. Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to take advantage of our wholesale pricing, including my classic standard MyPillow is only $14.88. But that's not all. I'm so confident you're going to love our classic MyPillows that I'm going to extend my 60-day money-back guarantee until March 1st, 2025. Plus, orders over $75 ship absolutely free.
All right, MyPillow.com. Use promo code CDM. And I cannot say it enough. I'm going to continue saying it until I'm dead. If you want to make America great again, you got to put your money where your morals are. You got to put your money where your mouth is. We've got the big shopping season of the year coming up. Buy American, buy from American businesses in your community, if possible. That's how we, that's how we're going to reclaim our supply chains and reclaim our nation.
That's a fact.
All right, let's bring in our guest. Today we have the incredible chairman, chairwoman, chairperson of the Libertarian Party of Colorado, Hannah Goodman. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. No worries on the pronouns.
Hey, chairman is the, you know, we've always said it up until recently, and you're doing a great job. We're going to get into a lot of the changes that's been happening with the influence of the Libertarian Party in Colorado becoming a force to be reckoned with. I want to start, Hannah, with your hearing that you had on Monday in this lawsuit. So tell the we went kind of in depth on the landscape and what was alleged in your lawsuit last week before the hearing, and then of course we were there at the hearing. But give us a little background on the case, how it came about, and Oh, that's good. Yes, I like that.
I'm probably gonna go, I'm gonna run with that. Like, that's probably going on my Twitter bio now. Yeah. I love that. It's so
that's awesome. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So, bring everybody up to speed on where we're at with the case.
So where we're at, well, where we've come from is we had that hearing on Monday, and if you guys watched it, I was there, first witness called, and what kind of impact and why it's so important to have integrity in our elections and what that does for third parties. We all generally have a good idea on what that does for two parties, you know, and I'm over here just this little minority like, but I really need this data to be clean though, so that I know where I'm falling exactly in this political landscape so I can maneuver through it and try to swing my little swing vote power around to advance liberty. I don't care what that looks like. I don't care who's advancing liberty. All I know is I'm coming in as the vanguard and I'm going to push it. And I'm going to keep pushing it till we get it. So clean data from our elections is really important. You know, money is the lifeblood of politics. And I would argue that data is our central nervous system. So if we aren't monitoring that and really seeing what things look like in truth, then we're not really getting a whole, you know, vital read on our body, so to speak, on the body politic. So that's really what we are invested in as a third party. And also, you know, election integrity, it affects everyone. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat, it doesn't matter if you're independent or a third party, even Green Party, right? Election integrity, do we have secure elections or don't we? And so the Secretary of State office decided to, or not really decided, accidentally, who knows, maybe decided.
They claim accidentally. I don't necessarily think that they deserve the benefit of any doubt, but.
Why should they? I mean, yeah. So with that, they published those passwords for months on their website. And we got wind of that out of that news story from Kyle Clark on 9 News. And we are like, well, is anyone going to step up and do anything? You know, I have very limited resources. I can't really compete resource-wise with the two major parties, but our lawyer, you know, has been in the election integrity fight for a long time. And my co-plaintiff, Mr. Wiley, has obviously been in the election integrity movement for a long time. I have in my local area, and not necessarily on the state level. So we were able to just mad cram dash, get a case put together, try to find some solid law to stand on. We did. Because they've taken this action, you know, it really does show damage to the elections. And I thought it was absolutely crazy that the judge completely dismissed the law, saying that they had to knowingly do this, when the law actually itself doesn't cite that. And so with that, that's exactly what we are appealing to the Supreme Court of Colorado, which we just filed. I love it. At 11:58 on Friday evening. I'm like, that's
down to the wire.
Yeah, that's really against my type A personality. but you can only push law so fast, and we really needed to make sure our case was solid. And so what we're going to appeal is that there was, in fact, a breach, that Jenna Griswold did, in fact, breach her duty. We've thrown the hand counting to the side. We're not going to get that. We already know. Like, I mean, I want to win something. So what do we have to stand on? And I believe that we have the law to stand on. And all we're asking for is the admittance of the breach of duty, because that's an incredible breach of duty. So with that,
let me pause you there, because the law on this is very interesting. The law in question knowingly publishes or causes to be published the BIOS passwords. This is a law that was passed in the wake of Tina Peters, and Tina Peters did not herself publish the passwords onto the internet, but the state argued, and, you know, I think successfully in court, that she caused to be published because she participated in the capturing of those videos. And then that, through her and her proxies, were put on the internet. It was a 5-alarm fire when Tina Peters did
it. Here's my question, because you mentioned Kyle. Who discovered it before him?
The Republicans.
The Colorado GOP issued a press release stating that they had become aware that these passwords were on the internet. And then at that point, this is my opinion, at that point, the State Department, the Colorado Department of State, was caught in a cover-up because they knew about it and they took some actions, right? They contacted CISA, but they didn't contact the clerks who had the breached devices. And in my opinion, they were caught in a cover-up. And then we, you know, saw the past couple of weeks of rhetoric of, oh, it's not a breach. This is Jenna Griswold on Kyle Clark. This is not a breach. This is not a security breach. A few days later, you've got the governors and other elected Democrats saying, listen, this was a very secure, a very serious breach, but we caught it and everything's fine. And at what point is there accountability for the repeated misstatements?
Well, here's my question. Who's responsible for the maintenance of this site?
So the State Department, the technical guys in the State Department, but specific to the passwords, there's four people plus a supervisor in the State Department. It's Jesse Romero's team. The four of them plus a supervisor are, according to his sworn testimony in Tina Peters' trial, the only people with access to those passwords. They are under lock and key. They are treated as the keys to the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And also, they're on the website.
So who's going to... Right. Hold on. There you go.
They were live on the website when Jesse Romero said that under oath in Mesa County. They were live on the website then when he stated, oh, this is a serious breach. I rang the alarm bells. We had a very serious problem. They then, over the course of years after, passed 22-153, the Colorado Election Security Act, which states anyone that knowingly publishes or causes to be published the BIOS passwords has committed a felony, except if that person works for the State Department and then they're just going to cover it up and then lie about it when they get caught.
So these individuals are still, they still have a job.
Oh yeah.
They're responsible for cleaning it up right now. They're the ones that are on task to fix the problem that they created. Sorry, Hannah, go ahead.
No worries. Yeah. It's always amazing that when the government messes up, don't worry, citizens, we've investigated and we found we did absolutely nothing wrong. Like, what?
That's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy.
And it's the investigation of themselves, right? So there's a lot of people calling for the AG's office to do an investigation into the Department of State.
The fact that you have to call for it is crazy.
Fact. That's a fact. However, also, the AG's office is outside counsel for the Department of State. It's basically them investigating their own client as lawyers.
Yep.
That's a conflict. They can't be like, so then they're like, okay, well, we're going to have this outside law firm. Jenna Griswold picks her own outside law firm to investigate her breach. That should not be how this works. And only in government does it work this way.
Right. Because if it were you or I or anyone else, we'd be in jail.
Quick.
Straight up. I mean, look at Tina Peters. That's a fact.
I don't get it. I do not understand it. And then the fact that they're just doing this to your faces, like, like, this is all good.
Like, and then they're calling us conspiracy theorists and election deniers, by the way.
Right.
Think about it. 34. So they admitted 34 counties in court on the record were the exact number. Now we're hearing stories out of the same news network, Kyle Clark 9 News. 34 counties have went even further Democratic. And it's like, oh, who could have predicted?
Out of all the states that have gone to the right, you guys just happen to be different. Okay.
Yeah. After this passwords breach, like, okay, so that definitely seems real sketch. It's exactly 34 counties that have the breach. Exactly 34 counties move more to the left. So, I mean, sure, correlation doesn't equal causation, but that's enough to make me question.
Just a coincidence, you know? Hannah.
Yeah. silly me.
And on the, just to provide clarity for the audience, the 34 counties, this Deputy Secretary of State, Chris Beall, testified in Monday's hearing that there, so originally, according to the GOP press release, 63 of 64 counties had impacted passwords. So their devices had the passwords live on this spreadsheet on the website. Now, some of that equipment was no longer in use in use in the county, and some of the passwords had already been changed within the county, from that list. And so the number of impacted devices is less than 63. We didn't know how many less. And we had analysts, and others that had the spreadsheet that were telling us what they were seeing. But the 34 number of the counties that actually had an impact, actually had a security breach, was 34. Now, we don't know how the State Department got to 34. We don't know if it was the, just the devices that were not still in use, plus passwords that had already been changed, or if there was other factors that they use to discount the 63 down to 34. Did they talk to people in the offices? Did they review security footage? We don't know. We know that the Deputy Secretary of State said 34 counties had an actual security breach. 34 counties shifted to the left is a statement that was made by Kyle Clark.
Okay.
And I don't know what counties he has either. I don't think that he's listed. He's provided a list of what those 34 counties are. And depending on which data set you're looking at, you could get a different answer. And so on both of the 34s, we don't have enough data to compare them and say, are they exactly the same counties? But the numbers are interesting.
Not even Misty's buying it. Like Misty's not having it. Like this is crazy. This is absolutely insane, and I'm not so much surprised about the cheating factor. I'm surprised at the fact that they're doing it in your faces and telling you, they like peeing on you and telling you it's raining. It doesn't make any sense.
It shows you the decadence of our current state of affairs in Colorado. We are decayed all the way through.
When did the transition into these lunatics happen? Around what time?
So did you ever read a book that I absolutely love? It's kind of become my playbook, is The Blueprint, How the Democrats Won Colorado. There's a ton of information about how this whole thing has happened over the course of years. Mm-hmm. So, from like 2012, maybe a little before that, all the way to now, they've passed different kinds of legislation. They've, dumped all kinds of money, and this kind of ties into Congressional District 4 and what we're seeing as far as vote totals here. I told people that Congressional District 4 is now on the chopping block. They're going to dump a ton of resources into this district, see how many votes they can get this time. They're going to plug those numbers into their formulas. And then the next two cycles, we're going to see this whole district flip Democrat with the use of money, targeted data, and the voting machines. We're done for.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I want to dig into CD4 because you were candidate on the ballot for CD4. Before we do that, tie off for us on this appeal that you guys have going on. What are the next steps? What do we expect to see happen? Where do we go from here?
So Monday is a holiday. So that was ridiculous timing. But anyway, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we should have some type of response by Friday. Whether they're going to hear the case, whether they're going to dismiss it, I hope they'll at least give us a hearing because, with the law and how, important our elections are, I hope they'll at least give us the decency of giving us a hearing. I'm really hopeful for that. I don't know how likely that is. But basically, we just got to sit and wait until then.
Yeah. So part of my favorite part of your testimony in the hearing on Monday was when you introduced yourself and you said, I'm a voter. I'm the chair them of the Libertarian Party, and I'm a candidate. And it's like I got three standings I'm standing on here. But let's talk about CD4. So you were on the ballot for CD4, Libertarian Party candidate. The Republican on the candidate is Lauren Boebert, and Lauren Boebert is currently the sitting congresswoman for CD3. had a rough 2022 reelection in CD3 and decided to switch districts and run in CD4. And I think a lot of us CD4 voters felt like we really didn't get much of a say in that, that decision, within the Republican, you know, party process. And, Trisha Cavalrisi, who is the Democrat, and to oppose Lauren Boebert, really stood on the "I'm a daughter of the district" messaging in her campaign messaging of, listen, Lauren Boebert has just come in. She's not from this district. And quite frankly, that messaging kind of resonates. There's a lot of voters in CD4 that I know had a very hard time voting for Lauren Boebert, even though they didn't want to give the seat away, didn't want to lose the CD4 seat. I know a lot of people that couldn't do it. I think your vote totals show that there are quite a lot of people that couldn't do it. Wow. So tell us about the race. Why'd you get in and what was the process like?
Well, it goes back to the pledge that we issued with the deal with the GOP. It actually wasn't even for Lauren Boebert. It was for, not for incumbents. It was for new people running.
First tell what that deal is. Set that up for people.
Dave Williams and I, love him or hate him, I'm neutral. I don't got any ponies in that race. But knowing him for years, once he took chair of the GOP, he came to Phillips County. I was running for chair. We had a month apart being elected. He's like, hey, you know, we've worked together so long. We should work together. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, I don't like the Democratic monopoly any more than you guys do, believe it or not. And that really just doesn't represent me either. So with that, after I took chair, we're like, how can we work together? Let's strategize races. So the Libertarians issued a pretty, you know, basic, very vanilla liberty pledge. If people will sign up on these different things, we had a state level and we had a federal candidate level pledge, and we offered these to candidates. Hey, if you sign this, we'll get out of your race. It worked with different people who were running in races. I couldn't have done this without all of the people who stood up to run races and then accepted signed pledges and moved out of the way, like you see in Congressional District 8. Once this pledge went viral through the news here in Colorado, well, Lauren just said, the press asked her. I mean, of course, the press is always really unfair to her. So I understand, because I've had some stupid press ask me stupid questions and I had dumb answers too. No harm, no foul. She was like, I'm never signing that pledge. So I'm like, well, unfortunately, now I got to run someone against her because they're all watching and I'm only as good as my word. So Jim Wiley stepped in that race and we begged her. I actually, up until the last day you could withdraw, I had a signed and notarized candidate withdrawal form. And I wasn't even asking her to sign the pledge. I asked her to endorse a candidate in Arapahoe County for a county commissioner. That's it. That's all I asked. And they refused. So I stayed in the race. Unfortunately, I don't know how you want to look at that. I intended to run a lot more of a race than I did, but my husband's really ill and he's really in a downhill slope right now. So I wasn't able to dedicate time like I wanted to campaign. I'm still not doing bad. I've pulled so far the second highest number of congressional votes for a Libertarian in this district. Mm. So, you know, I've had a lot of press. It's interesting. Trisha Calabrese likes me a lot. She watches me a lot. They got the daughter of the district. It's almost like they bit it off of my campaign. I am a sixth generation Coloradan, and my family has been elbows deep in politics in Colorado since 1886.
Really?
Wow. I have five county commissioner grandfathers' pictures on the wall in my local courthouse. My great grandfather sat in the House of Representatives. I'm in the state legislature, was vice chairman of the assembly, was on some of the most powerful committees during his tenure in the 1960s, back when rural Colorado was Democrat. So it's real, and I come from a deep blue family. Surprisingly, I'm super rural.
That was when they were sane.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't we all cut our left arms off for them to go back to those kind of Democrats? Yeah, I don't want like, at least we'd have some sort of reasonable dialogue. Right. So I think it's really interesting that Trish's campaign, and there for a while, she even had a similar headshot on her profile to mine. It was like a side profile. And I was like, you guys are ripping off my branding. I must be doing something right. Yeah. But the thing about the Eastern Corridor is we're really culturally tight knit, right? We don't have an influx of new people that move here. No one moves to the Eastern Plains. No one moves to Holyoke, right? No one moves. A few people move to Sterling, like with the prison or something.
It's very flat and brown.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit like that. Yeah. So
sounds like a place for me. I'm okay with that.
You know, and so a lot of our politics down the Eastern Corridor, it's politics, but it's family. So yeah. You're very tight knit. I'm blessed to be able to like be in politics. I'm the first woman in my family even allowed and it not be a problem. I've made a lot of really cool strides over the years, but I just don't think Lauren Boebert quite understands. So you have to carry yourself in a certain way because yeah, there's some cities in this district, of course, but the majority of it is small towns. And in small towns, like I can't even go to the bar. I went to the bar with my husband for a Christmas party and my grandma called me the next day and she's like, you were at the bar? And I'm like, I was with my husband. I mean, I'm married. And she's like, no, I never want to hear of you being in that bar ever again. So with Lauren Boebert's, you know, bad things that happened, you know, at the Beetlejuice thing, that really, like those things will cost you a lot of votes.
She doesn't strike me as the small town person. Like she,
no,
yeah,
does not. I mean, it's a fishbowl. You have to learn how to live within your parameters, and it's hard. It is hard. And I know it was hugely unpopular. Here we're trying to make a deal with the GOP, and now we've got to go after Lauren Boebert. I mean, just because of the press, I think the press set that up. But in any case, you know, it really goes to show you all those vote totals. I know the Democrats are coming for this district. They're fired up. They dislike Lauren Boebert for, you know, whatever reason. So that all that drama is going to come here. And now the safest red district in Colorado, they're coming for it. And you see it in those numbers. Look at that.
Yeah.
What are they going to do next time?
Well, yeah. And I think so to me. And I said as much early in the campaign. I backed off it as she was the nominee because I didn't want to lose the red seat to the blue vote, right? However, it felt like entitlement. It felt like entitled to a seat. We got to find a place to put her because she's entitled to a seat. And my initial, you know, reaction to the election result is, this is not so much a change in our district as it is a rebuke of the candidate that was put up for the Republicans. However, I said that on Twitter and somebody came back and said, hey, Parker just voted in a Democrat mayor. And that's very interesting to me. Do you, when you were on the campaign trail in the district, Hannah, do you get the sense that the demographics of CD4 are materially changing, becoming more more, I don't know, Democrat, or I can see it going more libertarian, but more willing to vote for Democrat.
I really think they're weaponizing the unaffiliated vote. And that's, the Democrats are really effective at targeting them and getting them to vote the way that they want. That's the only way I can explain that we would have a Democratic mayor in Parker.
Yeah.
Some of my cousins live in Parker, so I'm shocked that that's the case.
I used to live in Parker.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you shocked that there's a Democratic mayor there?
Yeah. It's kind of, I was in elementary when I lived in Parker. That was years ago. I'm not gonna tell you how old I am, but it was super suburb, very quiet. I don't know what it's like nowadays, but is it pretty much the same?
So during COVID, they were one of the first like areas on the front range to like reject masking and all that. Mm-hmm. That was refreshing. So where I'm at, we all rejected that rather quickly. We kind of did it for a little bit, for like a month, maybe 2 months. And we're like, nah, never mind. And so.
Okay, that'll work.
Like, we're all related. So yeah, it was a like dumb. So, but I thought it was really interesting that Parker, and I was told by my cousins that live there, we have a lot of people from like Orange County, California that have settled here. And I lived in California for like 10 years and I lived in Southern and Northern California. I lived near Orange County. So I do know that, and the Republic of California used to be a bastion of liberty and republicanism, especially centered in Orange County. So it doesn't, I'm like, okay, so those people that moved to Parker, I just don't see them voting Democrat. I just think it's the weaponized independent vote that we have here that the Democrats spend a lot of money to target.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. So you mentioned set up as we, I want to shift and talk about CD8. Set up the role the pledge played in CD8.
So initially when we were working on, I've been in talks with Gabe Evans for a really long time. Also, I adore him. I just think overall he's super based and we have a lot of points where we come together and come together really nicely. He also gave me a lot of information on so many other things that were not on my radar. I'm like, yes, but I'm a homeschool mom and he's a homeschool kid. So we're just going to be like on this level and we're just going to like vibe. So that was fun. And initially he had some hesitation towards a particular point in the plank. He worked it out with the candidate. After he decided not to sign it, we went into convention, we nominated a candidate. And once we nominated candidates, I told all of them, look, they had their chance to not run before our assembly. Anyone who wants to continue to run but wants to approach you, that is now your deal that you get to negotiate. If you need my help, I am the deal maker. I can come in and help you. But the vast majority of my people that bowed out and for signed pledges, they negotiated all those terms themselves. So Eric Joss and Gabe Evans negotiated the pledge and got it to where Gabe Evans would sign. You're seeing now how neck and neck they are. And look, if we had a libertarian in that race, the last time we had a Democrat in that race, that was the race that was like, oh, you cost, you know, the Republicans that election. And so I know for a fact that we own the swing vote and we can weaponize it at any point in time in Congressional District 8. So it was really cool to see my candidate and Gabe Evans work out a new version of the Liberty Pledge. And it was beautifully done. It was a nice piece of politics where we could come together on liberty. And now we're reaping the benefit of that. So that's—
And I just let me pause you there. I really think that's what the people of Colorado want. The voters in Colorado is to see alliances form and to see us come together across these lines to be able to defeat the supermajority that's driving our state into the ground. You know, 50% of the country, or 50% of the state rather, is unaffiliated. The Republicans account for what, 23% at most, over and above that. That is prime for alliances being the, you know, making deals and finding the most electable candidates for, you know, the base platform, the Bill of Rights, freedom, liberty, for us to be able to, you know, not to throw off the shackles of the communist insurrection that's happening. That's what I think people want to see. And we see the impact of that in this race. So CD8 still has not been called. They're saying they might not call it until Thursday.
That is too long. Like, yeah, are you serious?
For real.
Hannah, yeah, Hannah, you haven't been on this show before, but I often ask this question. As time progresses and Colorado keeps getting allegedly bluer and bluer, what is the end goal here? Like, what are they aiming for? Ash has an answer all the time, but
you want my answer?
Sure.
Top down control.
For what? It's like, to do what?
So, I mean, we've had hardcore communists in our state legislature, actual ones. Like, real hard, like legitimately, I'm a communist, right? Several of them have been voted out. And so that really tells you the voters of Colorado don't want such a progressive agenda. But the thing is, there's a lot of money and to be made and a lot of power to be had and up for grabs if everything is retained under a democratic monopoly. But the thing is, you know, communism's failed every time it's been tried.
Yeah, it looks great on paper. It's just nobody can execute it. And my thing is this: once they bleed, let's just say for instance, it just becomes a bastion of democratism, right? Okay, that's fine. So now once they let's just say they bleed Colorado dry, then what? Then what they gonna do next? Who they gonna rule over after that?
Well, look at California. We're seeing mass exodus into Texas and Colorado. Colorado was first, Texas is second.
And Florida.
Yep, they're just taking bites. Whatever bites they can, they're going to grab. I mean, I think they're going to, in their mind, they're going to create this utopia, which, you know, I teach a banned book club for my homeschool co-op for our teens. And so we're always talking about dystopian and utopian fiction because it takes ideas and pushes them to the absolute extremes. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, usually utopianism and dystopianism intersect quite a bit.
Right.
So what they would really like is complete control. You will eat the bugs, you will own nothing, and you will be happy. Only you won't be, you'll be starved to death. You know, and people forget communism is actually an idea that goes hand in hand with the founding of America. There's always been communist compounds. And in fact, I was raised by members of a communist compound here in Colorado called the Emissaries of Divine Light. They will starve you to death if they can. I know I have rickets in my leg and my hip. Rickets is something that went out of fashion in the late 1800s with the industrial revolutions and things like that. Yeah. So my shin is kind of shaped like a question mark, and my hip socket is malformed from malnourishment as a child. The good news is you'll never be able to break my will and I'll die first. The bad news
is that I'm physically made. My thing is, okay, now after they've just, now here's the thing. This is why I never understood the mindset and where these people are going with this. Once they starve you to death and everybody's dead, then what? What are they going to do next?
I don't think they think that far, but there is an
aspect of loving the problem, right? You have forever problems that can't be. So this is why, you know, climate change is the perfect communist overthrow op, because you're never going to solve for weather.
Who wants problems?
And it's incredible. It's when you kind of zoom out from it and say, okay, how are we going to, we the humans on the surface of the planet, going to solve for climate change? The solutions get real dumb real quick, and they all come back to centralized power and control for global government. That's how we have to do it. But this is a multi-generational, we're going to be fighting this a long time. We're going to have to do this for a very long time. And so just give us your liberty. And we promise we won't misuse it. We're doing this for all of us. We're going to save the planet. We're going to the planet now.
You're going to, once you, but here's the thing. I ask a lot of people this stuff. Like Ash has been in like Twitter spaces with me and this other guy. He claims to be a Marxist. He's hilarious. But I always ask, what is the timeline here? Okay, so right now we have a problem. We have a problem. You're going to solve it by me giving you total control over my life. Okay, cool. You dropped the ball on that. Now people start dying. People start, you know, it's just total chaos. Now you have, what's next? You're going to keep telling me you're going to fix it? And as the time progresses, everybody just dies.
Yeah.
And then what are you going to do? Just sit in the room by yourself and be like, I pulled it off.
Think about the USSR. That's essentially it.
It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. The goal, what I would think would be the goal, would be like, let's get everybody prosperous, then I can get more money.
Like, for them, Ayn Rand called it like a zero-sum game, where like the end goal is to kill everyone and everything.
Just kick it on Earth by yourself, like just be here.
And then they'll have everything. They don't realize, because they have this weird concept of production and like the economy and how like it just magically produces and people just but they forget the Soviet man was never created. Which is the man who will go to work when other people won't and produce when others aren't. And it's so interesting. Like, I'm really well read. I've read almost everything like that you can read. And Das Kapital is so similar to the Confederate Manifesto, which is a lot longer name than that. I don't know what it's called. But the driving economic theory behind the Southern states before the Civil War, they had this whole economic theory. And if you replace slave for proletariat in between these two works, you get the same book.
Yeah,
right.
And that's, they derive from the same philosophy, Kantian philosophy. They didn't actually have any bearing on each other. But like in the Confederate Manifesto, they said, well, we can't free the slaves. That's really inhumane. You know, they won't have any jobs and they won't have houses and they won't be able to feed themselves. See, like, what does that sound like?
Think about the government today. Think about how crazy that sounds.
Yes. It's insane. Yeah. Like, I think they'd still rather be free. I don't know.
Yeah, like, maybe. Yeah.
The thing about the, you know, communism specifically in Colorado, so you're, you know, you mentioned people like Elizabeth Epps or Tim Hernandez that are no longer going to be with us in the General Assembly because they were rebuked. Democrats, Socialists of America candidates were rebuked by voters. But the Colorado Communist Party and the Democrats, Socialists of America are organized and powerful entities in our state. I remember in the wake of George Floyd when Elijah McClain happened and there was all of those protests. My firm at the time, I was still working in corporate America, encouraged everybody in the office to go to a march put on by the Colorado Communist Party. To have that kind of influence into the business community is an alarming, it's an alarming reality that we have. And because the candidates were buked, we have to be vigilant to not think that the ideology has died, because it most definitely has not. And communists are notorious for going underground and regrouping.
Hey, Ash, yeah. I got a question for you. And Hannah, maybe you can help with this answer too. Like, how much money has left Colorado since these lunatics have taken over?
Left Colorado? I do not know the answer to that. Yeah. That would be really interesting. And I think it would be probably demographically, like the Eastern Plains, our farmland is mostly pretty locked down. Right. Occasionally quarters come up. I think there's two quarters for sale, or there was two quarters for sale here. Mm. I think you might get 2 to 3 quarters of farmland come up for sale once a year in the entire, like, 3 counties of Sedgwick, Phillips, and Yuma counties. So out here, like on the Eastern, I can really speak to the Eastern Plains. I'm like way less able to speak to the Front Range in Western Colorado. I imagine Western Colorado is pretty much the same. You have generational Coloradans passing down land. And so that's pretty good. But the influx of people into the Front Range and on all of the industry there, I would imagine we've lost quite a bit, especially through COVID. It's my understanding, I could be wrong, somebody else may know, that a lot of the buildings downtown, there's like a huge amount of unoccupied space in all of those skyscrapers. And
that you have skyscrapers that are empty?
Yeah, or mostly empty.
Yeah. It never came back. So I was working downtown when COVID hit, and you know, we were still still a relatively vibrant place in the Denver city. It was starting to, you know, during the Trump administration, we saw a lot of protests. We saw a lot of destruction of property, start to see some slippage, but still pretty, pretty vibrant place. When COVID happened in the lockdowns, people stayed home. Right. The business community that lives in the suburbs and commutes into the city, out of sight, out of mind. What happened to Denver was out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. And what we saw during 2020 and through 21, before the offices, you know, attempted to open back up, people got real comfortable being at home, and Denver became infinitely more unsafe. And the kind of, you know, regulator of the city government caring that business people are coming in, they're riding the train in, they're patronizing the restaurants, they're the heart in a lot of ways of the city economy, was gone all of a sudden. And what filled its space was social justice entitlement. And I don't think it's recovered. And you haven't, they have not been able to get that population back into the city. One, because we all prove that we can work from home, right? We don't actually have to be co-located together in physical spaces. So for some work you do, but for in large part for the laptop class, people can do it for home from home. And after right. doing that for a year, they like it. Right.
I love it. But
right. But then also it's not the city it was before COVID. Right. Denver is not the city it was before COVID. And it's definitely. You know, it's not safe. I think Denver is safer than 1% of cities.
Get out of here.
According to crime statistics, it's not a great place to be. And, you know, beautiful people of Denver, super vibrant. We keep getting told not matching reality.
I am appalled.
Yeah, Jared is.
Every time I go to Denver, from what it was like when I was a kid to what it's been like as an adult coming back to now, it feels incredibly unsafe. Mm-hmm. And I'm the amount of homeless. So living in California, I've been to Stockton. My husband worked in Stockton.
I've been to Stockton. Yeah,
I've been to Compton. I used to be involved in all kinds of things in San Diego County, like San Diego proper, like I've Sacramento, San Francisco. Exactly. I lived in Northern California and left right as San Francisco became an absolute hellhole. And we're seeing that now in Denver, but it's worse than I legitimately am scared, and I've been a lot of places I wasn't that scared of.
Yeah.
and honestly, San Francisco, this happened in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Like I was out there not too, let me see. I was out there probably just before it started going to shit. Like, that's crazy. Cause I went from San Francisco to Napa Valley. You know, I was able to go to In-N-Out Burger and nobody broke into the car. Like, everything was cool. So I don't know what's going on now. I
went to Scottsdale, Arizona to visit my mother a few weeks ago. And I was like, wow, your city is so, cause I don't live in the city. I live, there's one stoplight in the whole county for like three counties over. Wow. I got it, right. So I, when I go into a city, I'm always just like culture shocked. Cause I don't live there. And I'm like, your city, it's so clean. There's no homeless people here. Like, I feel so safe. Oh, and she's like, that's sad. I'm like, well, wait till you see Denver.
Yeah.
Cause my mom was born and raised here. So
that's sad. Yes. Yes, it is.
That's insane. Wow.
All right. So I want to shift a little bit and talk about the house, the Colorado House, the allegedly representative chamber of our General Assembly. Yeah. Friday, they held a vote for House leadership. The incoming House members held a vote for House leadership. I believe they held this vote before the HD50 race was called. So that was Ryan Gonzalez came from behind to defeat Mary Young. And we still have HD16 and HD19. Dan Woog pulled ahead in the Republican count. That slowed down, probably won't be decided until Thursday, now we're told. And Rebecca Kelty overtaking Stephanie Vigil down in HD16 down in the El Paso County area. Yes, it's not enough votes to determine the House leadership outcome, but we're in the middle of the election period, and we've been told repeatedly that we have to respect the election period. We have to make sure that every person's vote is counted. Everybody's voice is represented in our representative government, and they're holding leadership votes. They're actioning the outcome of the election. They are taking action on the outcome of the election, voting for House leadership in Colorado before all the votes are counted. Before, all the winners are determined. It's, to me, it's a massive slap in the face.
Ash, listen to the way that you just described it, right? They're telling you what? Repeat that, please. What are they telling you about the election?
They're actioning the outcome of the election.
No, I'm saying you're saying they're telling you respect the respect. Yeah. Respect the election.
Oh, yeah. We have to respect the election period. It's not election day. It's election period. And there is a period of time before election day and a period of time after election day that is a sacred, protected space. You can't ask questions inside of that. You can't make changes unless you're the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, the fact you got to use this type of language to manipulate people into believing what you say, you are like this. It's BS. Like this could really be simple. Like,
but Darren, here's the thing: is that they keep changing the rules. So the triple majority decides what it wants to do, and then they make it official through their rulemaking, and they put it into the statute, and all of us have to abide by it. But they don't, though.
Yep. Rules for thee and not for me, peasants. I'll also point out that the Kelty race and Gonzalez race got Ryan Gonzalez sent us a video to our convention. He agreed to the terms of the pledge without signing it in that, and so we didn't run anyone against him. So that is a successful outcome, thanks to the Libertarians not running someone in that race.
Awesome.
And Kelty is a pledge signer, so I'm super happy that she's pulling ahead and that we've had such a smashing success with this pledge strategy. I really hope that we can move together forward and continue it through more election cycles and see what we can get done to break up this Democratic supermajority monopoly, as you will call it. But the fact that we can't, it's respect, because we're the authority until we want to do something and then we don't have to respect anything. And it's like, well, if we're going to respect the will of the voter, we're going to respect the will of the voter. And you don't get to pick and choose what that is. You just have to abide by it. But my government's corrupt.
You know what that's called? Yeah. You know what that's called, Hannah? That's called democinism.
That's what it's called.
I love that term.
That's a Darren special. All right. So we talked about Ryan Gonzalez race. Congratulations to Ryan Gonzalez and congratulations to everybody that won.
Yeah.
House District 19, Dan Woog pulled ahead of Jalair McMillan. I think it was Thursday night or Friday night that he pulled ahead. And this is one of the races that they're now telling us may not be decided until Thursday of this week because of the extensive process to cure. Apparently there were also like 2,000 military uniformed and overseas votes, UOCAVA votes that were damaged in some way and have to be duplicated. And so that's going to slow it down a bit as well. It is interesting that the races that are having the hardest time counting are these races that actually put the supermajority, the Democrat supermajority in the House at risk. And this one, Rebecca Kelty versus Steph Vigil, it's 21 votes separating these two candidates. And if Woog goes Republicans' way and Kelty goes Republicans' way, the Democrats' supermajority in the House is not so super anymore. So that's the power. Like you said, she's a pledge signer. Gonzalez is a pledge signer. Made a deal in CD8. These are the areas where we're going to see flips happen, and we're going to see the impact of forming alliances, forming coalitions. I think you guys have done such an incredible thing and I'm not a Republican. I'm proudly an affiliated voter, and I'm going to, call out corruption where I see it, regardless of where that is. But the one thing I feel pretty strongly on is that if we want liberty to be accessible in the state of Colorado, we're going to have to find coalitions outside of the two major parties because it's not cutting it here anymore.
Yes. And also the burden is now on the GOP to run really strong liberty candidates that we can all get behind, especially in these districts, because if the Republicans are just going to run pretty much Democrats, why would I stay out of that race? you know? And not every person running for the GOP is a rhino, but there are rhinos. I mean,
one of my
commissioners was a former Democrat who switched Republican to get elected as a commissioner. So they are real things, and we want people really solid on liberty. And that's basically our demand. Be liberty leaning or suffer the consequences. Because if we're going to be faced with the choice between a Democrat and a Democrat that's undercover as GOP, like, well, I'm not picking either of those. That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the choice facing a lot of voters. Like I said before, in CD4, I voted for Lauren Boebert. I love you, but I was terrified we were going to lose the seat to the Democrats, in large part because I know a lot of people that couldn't vote for Lauren Boebert. They could not in their conscience do it. And they were solid, reliable Republican voters.
Yeah.
And that is a message that I hope the GOP learns, that you cannot take the voters for granted, and you're not entitled to our votes.
Yep.
None of these candidates are entitled to our votes. They have to earn our votes. And let's circle back around to Jenna Griswold, our friend Jenna Griswold. So as you said, we have the appeal to the Supreme Court.
Hold on. We got a new sound effect for Jenna. Hold on. Here we go.
Good one. I like it. So calls for Jenna Griswold to resign are ubiquitous. The Democrats have turned on her. Westward, Denver freaking Westward wrote a hit piece on Jenna Griswold. I have been, since the very beginning of this thing, I have no love for Jenna Griswold. Everybody knows that. However, getting rid of Jenna Griswold does not solve anything with elections, because she doesn't do it anyway. She's a puppet. She's the face of it. It is Chris Beall and it's Matt Crane and it's the public-private partnership and third-party associations underneath that, you know, the branding of the State Department that's actually running things. And what we've seen happen is, it doesn't appear that Jenna's hands are on the election. Again, they weren't prior, but the people who broke it are now the ones responsible for fixing it and attempting to investigate themselves. But not so fast, because the Boulder County Republicans have come out and called for an investigation. And we have, in fact, an investigation opened up in Denver District, Judicial District 2, and El Paso District, Judicial District 4 has joined that investigation. We'll see if other districts join on as well. But this is a criminal investigation into what happened with those passwords. And I hope they go deeper into that and see exactly who's running the show there. And in my opinion, those are the people that need to be held accountable, because it's a career bureaucracy that has been in place. I think Hillary Rudy testified she's been in that office, in that domain, since 2006. And that office is run by the careers. They love the process that we have, this process that's taking it until next Thursday to be able to identify who the winners of races are. They love this process. They protect it with everything that they have. And as we've discussed, they don't follow their own rules. And so, you know, we had 2013, all mail-in ballots came in. 2015, electronic voting machines came in, mandated. Both of those decisions were done by the same people, executed by the same people that are in power in that office now, but they were done under Republican secretaries of state. The elected official is a figurehead for in terms of how elections are run in the state of Colorado. And if people are concerned about how our elections are run in the state of Colorado, we need to do a lot more than get Jenna Griswold to resign. Hannah, what say you?
No, just if you really want to scare them, send them, put it in jail. That's how you do it. She's got to go.
I don't know, man. I disagree though, Darren, because I think if you could put Jenna Griswold in jail right now, it would not change a single thing with our elections.
It definitely would not. And I think it's really interesting that in every sector, in any industry that deals with cybersecurity and has a cybersecurity issue component to it, they always assume a thing has been breached, and then you go in and investigate and find the breach, right? Yep. There is not that process at all in the cybersecurity component of our elections. I'm a libertarian. I'm not going to be like, we need to pass a law all the time. But actually, I think, am I a libertarian now? I don't know. Maybe we need to have a law. I don't know. I feel crazy saying this. Maybe we ought to have some type of law that outlines the process of, this is the protocol, because there is no protocol. These people are just making it up, whatever they want to investigate.
As they go, yeah.
However they want to investigate it, instead of having the proper protocol of assuming you've been breached because these things are released, you know, now you need to go in and redo whatever it, the whole protocol. There needs to be some sort of protocol if we're going to continue to have these type of elections with these voting machines, with these passwords, with all the blah, blah, blah. I can't believe as a libertarian, I'm calling for another law. But I really think that if we don't have the process outlined, they're certainly not going to do it.
But here's the thing, Hannah, you calling for another law is, I think, if I'm hearing you correctly, is based on the assumption that we have to continue to use this system, this highly centralized technology-enabled election system that fails us time and time again, that we are gaslit, it's gold standard, and yet we won't know who's sitting in that congressional seat until Thursday. And that's where we have to start. In my opinion, is that we don't need more laws to govern an unconstitutional system. We need to rip that system out.
Yes. I'll just say one more thing.
Okay, you go, and then I'll call on Darren.
Okay, so I ran for county clerk to primary my county clerk here in Phillips County. That was a whole thing, a whole weird deal. I wanted to do paper hand counted ballots. The law states that you must use these voting machines. So I'm really considering another Secretary of State, another county clerk run to see how I can challenge that, because I really think that the state law can't supersede the will of the local people. So Phillips County, Colorado, wants to go to paper hand-counted ballots. There should be nothing standing in our way, and we could even put it to the test.
I definitely look forward to that. Darren, go ahead, because we are out of time, so I'll give you the last word, Darren.
I'm in school right now, learning a few things. Ain't nothing safe.
Yeah, nothing. Fact.
It's freaking crazy. It's crazy. The stuff that my professors show me, it's insane.
It's the threat landscape evolves faster than the mitigation landscape, for sure, in cyber. That's absolutely. All right. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be covering the appeal as it comes up, and hope to have you back as we get through the next round of this thing.
And give it up for Hannah,
and tell people, give it up for Hannah, and tell people where to find you and where to donate to the lawsuit.
You can follow me at Hannah for Liberty on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. And you can keep up with the party at LPCO on X or Twitter to help us. I mean, I'm a third party, super limited resources. I'm certainly not raising $100,000 for this lawsuit, but any amount to help support our legal efforts here would be really appreciated. And that's going to be lpcolorado.org/donate. Any amount works. We're trying really hard with the legal system to get this to go through. It's coming right out of my budget. I really need to replace those funds. So if anybody is really passionate about what we're doing as far as taking the Secretary of State to the Supreme Court of Colorado, please give us a donation. That's lpcolorado.org/donate.
Get out there and donate, people. Get out there and donate.
Thank you so much, Hannah, for being here. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to hit our last couple sponsors for the show, because we forgot to do that. And then we'll do our...
I guess we got to do this the right way now. Okay.
Yeah.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
I'm excited to announce our Christmas extravaganza is finally here. Get this season's flannel sheets for as low as $59.98. They won't last long, so get them while you can. Our famous My Slippers, they haven't been on sale for over a year. Regularly $119.98, now only $59.98. Our six-piece towel sets are back in stock with extremely limited quantities, only $29.98. With hundreds of MyPillow products, there's something for everyone on your Christmas list. Bathrobes, duvets, quilts, down comforters, and so much more. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to save on all MyPillow products. For example, flannel sheets for as low as $59.98. Or our six-piece towel sets, just $29.98. But that's not all. I'm extending our 60-day money-back guarantee until March 1st of 2025. Plus, all orders over $75 or more ship absolutely free.
At Tulip Blooms, we believe in more than just skincare. We believe in freedom. We believe in natural products made by Americans for Americans, using nature's finest ingredients to help you feel your best. Each Tulip Blooms product is carefully crafted with pure organic ingredients. No chemicals, no compromises, just clean, natural skincare you can trust. We know what matters to you: freedom, family, and a healthy way of life. That's why every purchase at tulipblooms.shop supports American jobs and a brand that values your freedom. Join the movement. Support a company that believes what you believe in. Visit tulipblooms.shop today. Tulip Blooms, natural skin care for patriots. Promo code ASH for 10% off.
All right, everybody. So make sure that as you shop this Christmas or holiday season, that you're shopping America. Shop American small businesses. Buy from local shops, local producers, foods. All sorts of we've got to reclaim our supply chain.
That's a fact.
And yeah, gotta put your money where your morals are.
And if you're not supporting American businesses,
now go home and smoke some more crack.
All right.
That's right. Exactly. Everybody, do us a favor, and wherever you're watching us, please smash the thumb or the heart or whatever the like button is. We definitely appreciate that. And we will be back here next Sunday at 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, or daylight. I don't even know. Mountain Time, whatever standard or daylight we're in. Mountain Time. And hopefully by then we'll know who won the election.
Yo, that's ridiculous.
What?
That is insane. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, that's that. That's how it goes. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next time. We'll be right back.